Hello and welcome to the Potential Psychology Podcast. I'm your host, Ellen Jackson, and it's my mission to share the science of human behaviour in a practical, fun and inspiring way. In each podcast episode, I interview an expert from the fields of psychology, well-being, leadership, parenting or high performance. I pick their brain to uncover what they know about living well, what tips do they have for you and I, and I quiz them about how they apply their expertise in their own life. Join me as we discover simple, science-backed ways to live, learn, flourish, and fulfill your potential. Hello, and welcome to episode 13. My guest today is Karen Young, the founder of the very popular psychology-based website and online resource, Hey Sigmund. And if you go to the About page of Hey Sigmund, it opens with the line, "Because sometimes the only diagnosis is human," which to me is just the perfect encapsulation of not only the fascinating complexity of psychology and being a human, but also a really deep insight into what makes us both individual and binds us all together at the same time. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm very excited to have you here. We've got a few things we're going to talk about today, not the least the Hey Sigmund website and why it is and what you have brought to the world with it, but also your recently released book, Hey Warrior, which is about kids and anxiety.
Yeah, I'm really excited to chat about it.
Karen, can you tell us a little more about the Hey Sigmund website? A lot of our listeners may well be aware of it because it is very, very popular. But what's your purpose with the website and where did the idea come from?
I started it, hatched a few years ago. When I was in private practice, I actually realised that a lot of people just needed the information. So there were people who needed more support and longer term support. And then there were people who just needed the information that we have as psychologists. And when people have that information, the same information that we do, they can do really great things with it. So what I wanted to do was to find a way to get that information out there in a way that was jargon free and relatable and practical and relevant. And so that's where it started. And to be honest, I didn't know where it was going to end up. I just jumped. And I always say when you're on the right track, the path widens to meet you. So I just started. And, you know, I started with an idea and no clue of a middle or an ending. And this is where it's ended up. So I love it. And it just keeps evolving. And, you know, I try to just move with wherever it's taking me and, you know, where the need is and where it seems to be having an impact. So,
okay. And for our listeners' benefit, it's a website. I think you started doing a lot of the writing and you now have a lot of writers who write for you. Is that right?
I did do a lot of the writing. I do have people guest posting. I'm actually starting to wind that back now. If I get an article, which is, there's a lot of information out there on the internet and we can Google anything. So for the people who send in articles, you know, it has to be something a little bit novel and practical and from a position of expertise. So, you know, rather than people just, you know, there are a lot of writers who research and put it together with what's already out there on the internet. And I think that's just not helpful because there's already plenty of that out there. So the information I'm trying to give is I'm trying to be really solid with it and scientifically based and based in research. So, and there are some great people who write for the site regularly. So it's basically just on a, you know, we'll see if articles have, you know, the same philosophy as the website, then we do it, we put it out there.
And this is targeted primarily at an everyday type audience, people who are perhaps dealing with everyday life challenges that might include mild anxiety or depression or some of the mental health challenges, but also just a parenting, I know, is a big topic for you and aiding parents in helping their kids. Is that right?
Yeah. So we really cover, so it's not meant to be therapy. It's not meant to be that. So, you know, and it's, and I think it's really important for people to understand that it's not therapy. But I think even people who are going to therapy, there's information that people need. And I know one of my greatest frustrations when I was in private practice was I see people for an hour a week. With kids, sometimes it's less. And so there's so much more that I wanted to give them and I couldn't because of that time. And I think, and so that's what the website does. It's sort of that interim thing. But it's also for people who just, we're all human and we all have stuff that we struggle with from time to time. And I think everything exists on a spectrum. So there is a point where, you know, there are information and strategies which can nip these things in the bud and then it'll move beyond and people need more support, but still the information and still the practical, you know, where does it come from? What do I need to do to make it right? But also, what if my child is struggling with anxiety? What do I do? Because often I think that's what's missing in therapy a lot. My partner's depressed. What do I do? I'm with someone who's anxious. What do I do? I'm a teacher and I have anxiety in my classroom. What do I do? So it's that information. And I think things like anxiety and depression, while we're on it, they're so widespread. If we're not struggling with it, we know people who are really close to us. So it's information that we all need, but it's also just about how to live well. So it doesn't mean there's necessarily a struggle. It's just about, it's about living well and living as fully as we can. And this is hopefully where I come into it.
Yeah. And that's very much, I think, where psychology has that huge amount to offer in terms of what we, and I guess what we're talking about, what we would call a psychologist psychoeducation, to kind of filling in the gaps around human behavior and why things happen and how they happen and what you might be able to do both to support yourself and to support other people. And providing that additional information that, as you say, you can't necessarily provide one-on-one. There's so much we'd like to be able to communicate, whether it's to clients who come to see you or just out there in the general population to help support them and help people to grow and to flourish.
And it's all the information. So everything I write is stuff that I would use or that, you know, it's all based in research. So it's not just stuff pulled from, you know, from the internet, basically, I suppose, which all makes sense. And it's stuff that I would, you know, say to my kids to do or that I would do as a parent or as a person who is feeling anxious or a person who is feeling down or, you know, it's all relevant stuff. And I think it has to be, it has to make sense because people aren't stupid. It has to make sense and it has to be based. I think it, you know, there's a lot that science can't explain, which still makes sense. But I think one of the really great things about the last decade or so is we're able to see into the brain and we're able to see why things work. We're able to see why these things, which we just kind of knew worked, but we didn't know why, we can see why they work now. And that's the information I want people to have because it's really hard to do things unless you know why you're doing them.
Yeah, and I think that reliability and that evidence basis, as we again call it in psychology, is really important because it is something then that people can rely on. As you said, the internet is so full of information and being able to know, you know, it's overwhelming to be able to try and sift through that and work out, well, which bits should I be paying attention to and which bits shouldn't I? So having this wonderful resource where you know that, you know, this stuff has been tested and it's been used and it is supported by psychology and psychologists, and for most people it will help.
And that's it. And that's what I want to do. You know, we have this information, and I think the information we get as psychologists is gold because it's so important and everybody should have it. And there's all these new discoveries in psychology and there's, you know, the area of psychology is doing really great things and I just want everybody to have it, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I've spoken to a number of our colleagues, both on the podcast and in other conversations, about this tendency. And I don't know if this happens in other professions, perhaps it does, but to somehow keep this information to ourselves, we just haven't been very good at getting it out there into the public. And as you say, it is gold. You know, it really can make a huge difference to people's well-being and their mental health, and just their understanding that they're not alone.
Absolutely. And I think that's the biggest thing. I actually get a lot of emails, especially from adults, but also teens. I get a lot of information from teens around anxiety saying, I just read your article and I thought I was the only one who felt like this. And I've been wondering what's wrong with me. And I think that's what this is all about. It's about this, our shared humanity. And we all go through this stuff. We just go through it at different times and on different levels. And if we can tap into that shared humanity, and it is information, I think, to a large extent, that does that, it can be really powerful.
Yeah, yeah. And we're going to come back to kids and teens and anxiety shortly, but I'm interested to know, what led you to psychology? What's been your personal journey to this profession?
Gosh, I did it. I mean, up to grade 12, honestly didn't know what I wanted to do. So it's not like there was anything really interesting or exciting that led me to this. I actually looked at journalism at one point. I went through a phase of journalism, and then it was one of those things, and I hear a lot of grade 12 kids today going, but I don't know what I want to do. I've got my kids are the same. I don't know what I want to do. So you don't have to, because you've got plenty of time to decide. There's plenty of time. And even if you start something and it's not it, it doesn't matter. And so even then I thought, I know I love watching people and I'm fascinated with people and I love figuring out or listening to why people do things. And I've always thought, when you hear enough of someone's story, things make sense. So people seem to do these crazy things, but when you hear enough of their story, it doesn't make what they're doing okay, but it makes sense. And I find that fascinating. And so that's when I started into psychology. And at uni, even I loved learning about some of it, but you know, you're a psychologist, you know, it's not all interesting. It's not all, it wasn't all fascinating to me.
There was a lot of stats.
It was a little bit dry. And then I practiced and I loved it. I really loved it. So I thought, okay, this is exactly what I want to be doing. And I kind of just went from there, I think. And I did a course in Gestalt therapy and I just loved it even more. That's when everything made sense to me. And I started doing a lot of group work and I just thought, wow, people with people are really powerful. And then that's when and then I took some time off to have my kids, and then I knew I wanted to get back into psychology, but I just wasn't sure how. And I knew I wanted to do something different to private practice. So that's how I ended up here. So I think, and I often say to my kids, I didn't know at the start either, but I know that when you start on a track, if it's the right one, it'll widen for you. And that's what's happened. So it's nothing, you know, the story isn't an interesting one, but I think that's part of our shared humanity too. We don't always know where we're going, but it just feels okay.
Yeah, and that's one of the fascinating things. It's one of the reasons why I often ask this question of people, because I think there is a perception, and again, we're coming back maybe to teens and anxiety, you know, this issue around, you know, I'm supposed to know what I want to do, and I remember feeling that way. And so rarely is a career kind of linear. You know, it's very unusual to come across a person who really did know in their teens or younger, you know, have a particular career in mind and just said, right, that's it, that's what I'm going to do, and that's what they did. That's, I think, unusual. And to me, I think the most interesting careers are the ones that kind of wend their way around a little bit, and this idea of finding the thing that fulfills you, that excites you, that feels right, as you've described it for you with psychology, you know, is wonderful. I think we need to share more of those stories as well to lessen a bit of that anxiety.
Absolutely. I also think too, there are so many interesting professions. And for me, journalism is one. I look at teachers now and I think, wow, that would be a really great thing to do as well. So I think there's a lot of things, and sometimes it can be hard to settle the noise enough to find where you're meant to be. So I just I'm really grateful that I went the psychology path, and I loved being a psychologist, and I love, you know, having the opportunity to do this now. So for me, it was right, but it never always felt certain.
Yeah. I think. Yeah. And it's always changing. And interestingly, so you talked about an interest in journalism, an interest in teaching, and what we've been talking about really with the Hey Sigmund website is that kind of communication of information and learning and supporting people's learning, which I guess is a bit of the teaching profession. And now you are also an author.
Yeah, well, that is, yeah. That, and that's another accidental, beautiful accidental thing that happens, you know, when you're on the right track. But that came from a post, and that just was one of those things. If you asked me 3 years ago, would I write a book? And I'd go, no, I'm never going to write a book. I can't see that happening. But I suppose it's one of those things when the opportunity's there, you chase it and find, you know, it ends up finding you eventually. I always say to people too, you know, I really wanted this. I wanted this website to work. And I think sometimes you have to find the back door and the side door and the gate, do what you need to do to end up where you want to be. So it hasn't always been an easy path, but it feels right. And writing a kid's book was just a beautiful surprise, and it's how it ended up. So it wasn't, you know, like I said, when I started, I had no idea where it was going to end up. I just jumped, and the pool was really cold, and you know, now it's warm and it's beautiful and it's where I'm meant to be.
You're swimming. So tell us about Hey Warrior, your picture book for kids, helping them to understand anxiety. Is that right?
Yeah. So Hey Warrior came out of a post I did, which actually came out of a conversation I had with my daughter. So I also never started to do anxiety. I didn't start a website to do anxiety. I started a website to do everything and to see where it led. And she had to go into middle school, and she was really anxious, and it was really getting in her way. And she loved school and loved her friends and loved her school, and it was a little school. So it was sort of one of those things for a while. I thought, well, you'll get through this. It'll be okay. And then she talked about that feeling. She called it that feeling. It was on the way to soccer. And that's the thing about anxiety. It can start to generalize if you don't, you know, nip it in the bud. And she said, Mum, I've got that feeling again. And we were on the way to soccer, and she loved soccer too. And I said, tell me what it feels like for you. And she said, she described the racy heart. And I said, is it that feeling you get when you miss a stare? And she said, yes. And her words were, it's like when you're almost asleep and then you fall in your sleep. And I said, well, you've got this thing called anxiety. You know exactly what it is, and it's all okay. And then we went through the conversation. Basically, this is why you feel like you do, and this is what's happening, and this is what you have to do to feel okay about it. And then nothing more was said. So soccer's 20 minutes away, so it was a 20-minute conversation basically. And it's what Hey Warrior is. Hey Warrior is that conversation. And then a couple of weeks later, she came to me. And so I got her on mindfulness, and she was already exercising because she was doing soccer. But having that scaffold of what it is and why she feels the way she does. And she came to me 2 weeks later, and she said, that chat we had has really helped. I haven't had that feeling since. And I said, that's really great. We, you know, went on from there. And I think having that understanding of where it comes from and what it is, but also it's okay. Like I know it feels awful, but it's okay. It's actually really normal, and it's what your body's in. We went through the whole thing. And then one night I said to her, so I started the website in November, and then the next year in, this was in March, and I said to her, are you okay if I write an article about that chat we had? And I said, nobody reads my website at all. And she said, okay, but only if not many people read it. And I went, yeah, no, don't worry. And so I wrote the article. And then that was what started everything. And it made me realize what a need there is. You know, I knew from private practice that kids struggled with anxiety. And I also knew that parents struggled with what to do with that. You can feel so helpless, and even I felt helpless as a parent. And that's why I thought, you know, it needs to be, we need to do this differently. And it was just the response was huge. And so that's where I, you know, I thought, well, that's where it's widening for me. So that's where I'm going to go. And then I did have to adjust the post a little bit so we weren't talking about her so much. And then the book came out of that. And I think what really struck me is how I'm, you know, I work in this field and I didn't realise just what a problem anxiety is. And it's very manageable, people, you know, with the right information. And so that's when I started down the anxiety track. And I think when things get personal, it just awakes a passion. It's that, you know, that drive to just do more and know more and make it all make more sense.
And then help other people to understand it in the process. Because that's my, I'm by, you know, no means an expert in anxiety, but I do understand that in many ways it is one of the more manageable challenges that, as you say, we all face at different levels. Some people in a chronic way, some people in a quite an extreme way, most of us in a mild way in different forms. And a lot of, it's almost the anxiety about anxiety. It's having this physiological response that we don't know where it's coming from, and then that makes us panicky and anxious. And it's interesting that you say that not even, you know, feeling like you weren't necessarily that equipped to help your daughter in that situation despite being a psychologist, because I remember many years ago when I was probably in my, I think I might have been my mid to late 20s, and I started getting this, what I called my funny breathing. And it felt like there was sort of a lump in my throat and that my breathing was constricted. And despite the fact that by this stage, I don't think I was fully qualified, but I certainly had, you know, several years of psychology study under my belt. I went to the GP and they start sticking cameras down my, you know, take me off to hospital, stick cameras down my throat, looking for a physiological issue. And even the GP didn't suggest at any stage that this might have been an anxiety response. And it was only some time later that I started to understand that, and probably sharing my experience with other people who said, oh yeah, I get that sometimes too. And realizing for me that, that was actually just, you know, because of a set of circumstances in my life at the time, my body was having a physiological response. It was clear, you know, there was anxiety there, but I didn't feel like I was anxious, or I didn't feel emotional, or that got me really interested in you know, anxiety as an experience.
Yeah. I think too, in relation to kids, well, with my daughter, I couldn't do therapy with her because I'm a mum. So the stuff that might work with other people's kids wasn't going to work with her, and so it had to be something else. But also, I think parents are really powerful. They're the most powerful, most influential people in a child's life. And when the information is in their hands, it's amazing what can happen. But as parents, I know the number of times I feel helpless because I don't know what to do. You know, I feel like it's several times a week. And I think having that information and being able to do, and you know, that was, I was able to deal with that one, but there's plenty more that, like, I don't know, I want to be better for you, or I want to, you know, take care of this and understand it more, but I don't know, not necessarily related to psychology, but other things. But parents are really powerful. And I really do think that we all have everything we need to be whole in us. It's just about finding it and figuring out where to look and what to do with it when you find, you know, that place in you. And kids and teens, it's parents and teachers are powerful, and we can do it with ourselves if we have the information. And because we do, you know, we do have everything we need there.
And so Hey Warrior steps us through this story and helps to explain to kids, and I think it's aimed at kids in sort of primary school years, is that right? And steps them through the story to understand that, A, they're not alone, B, these are what these physical feelings are that you're feeling, and then how to deal with those.
Yeah, so it just talks about, because the worst thing about anxiety, and you touched on it, is those feelings, and it feels scary. And it's meant to, because anxiety is meant to drive us to fight or flee a danger. It's meant to drive us into action. So it's a really it's a primitive response. Our brain's been doing that since the beginning of us, so it's really good at it. And we, when there's nothing, when there doesn't seem to be anything to be scared of, it doesn't make sense. That feeling doesn't make sense. And that's because brains can read things wrong sometimes. Even like it's a strong, healthy brain. We can all read things wrong. And that's because it's going to tilt towards overprotecting than protecting, because it's best we stay safe, even if, you know, we have all this other stuff, like at least you're alive. That's how our brain, that's where our brain comes from. So those feelings feel awful, and they feed into the, it feels really bad, so something really bad must be going to happen, which feeds back into that, and it becomes a loop, feeds back into the fight or flight. And the way to short circuit, and you can start to fight anxiety. And the thing with fighting anxiety is the more you fight it, the more anxiety will fight back. It'll run at you harder than you can run away from it. So you need to understand it. And the whole thing about the whole thing with Hey Warrior is it's also making sense of anxiety in the sense that it's actually your brain trying to look after you. It's not a bad thing, and it's not a dangerous thing, and it's not a mean thing. It's not, you know, anxiety isn't a mean thing. It's trying to work with you, but you've got to be the boss of it. So when it thinks it needs to protect you, this is what it looks like. And it goes through, because every physical symptom of anxiety is there for a really good reason. But kids need to understand what those reasons are. And when they do, it all makes sense. And then they can short circuit that anxious response. So rather than fighting it or feeding it with anxiety about the anxiety, there are things that they can do to short circuit it. And it stops it becomes less scary. It starts to make sense. And the brain learns from experience. So the more anxious you get when you feel anxious, the more anxious the brain learns. Whatever we do the most is what we'll do the most. So if we can explain anxiety and encourage a really brave response or encourage a calming response, that's what the brain will learn, and it will find it easier to access that. And that's the wiring, that's the pathways that will set down, that will lay down in the brain. And kids get this, they get it. Once it's explained to them, they get it. And I think sometimes they're better at us than getting things, you know, when it's explained in a way they can understand. And that's what Hey Warrior does. So the warrior is your anxiety. It's like a fierce warrior there to protect you. And this is what it feels like, and this is what you do to be the boss of it. So basically that's it. And the illustrator's done these gorgeous illustrations, and she just did a beautiful job of, you know, the warrior is the amygdala, which is a part of the brain, and she's done it as this blue, fluffy, beautiful warrior, which is just, it just takes away that fear, I think.
And wonderful, not just, I mean, as we said, you know, this is designed for children in those primary years, but equally applicable to older kids, but also adults, you know, not just the parents who perhaps have a child struggling with, but I think there's a misperception perhaps of anxiety even amongst most adults, because ridiculously enough, these are not things we talk about. You know, this is such a skill for life. Kids who are reading Hey Warrior, who are understanding in their early years what this physiological and psychological response is and why it's there, and it's there to protect you. You know, having that context and that understanding helps them take control. And then they've got that skill for the rest of their lives. And so few of us get given that from our early days and then struggle much later.
That's right. And it is. And the thing about anxiety is we all get it. We all get it, because before an interview or a performance or an exam, we all get it. My son is 20 at uni, and he gets anxiety before an exam. And he did go into an exam and his brain locked up, and he said, I don't know what happened. I just couldn't find the answers. And I said, okay, you know, anxiety, and I've been talking to you about it. This is what it does. And so even then, and it wasn't until it was relevant to him that he read Hey Warrior. I said, read this book. There's thousands of copies.
They're lying around the house.
and it's, you know, sometimes you just need to find the right moment for them. And he came up and he said, so is this what? Is this? And I went, yes, I've been talking about it nonstop for 3 years. Okay, you need to hear it now. And I said, and you know what you need to do to unlock your brain is you need to breathe during your exam, because that's what anxiety does. It's locking up your brain. And then it made sense. So he was, he wasn't 20 at the time, but, 20. And I think if you can explain it to a child, everyone can understand it. And we can all benefit from understanding how anxiety works. I do it. So the stuff that is in Hey Warrior, I do before a presentation because I just, so I don't lock up, to calm my breathing. I get really breathy when I'm about to give a presentation. I know that's anxiety. I don't know how to stop it. So, you know, it's all relevant. So it is a kid's book, but it's kind of, well, if kids can understand it, everyone can understand it. But it's not just relevant for kids because we all get anxious on some level.
Yeah, and I love that. One of my, and I use this a lot in workplaces because in workplaces people like to use language that overcomplicates things. You know, we all like to sound like we, you know, special or so it's an acute phenomenon in workplaces. And so I'm often referring to, there's a scene in the movie Philadelphia, which is an old movie now, where and I think it's Denzel Washington saying to Tom Hanks, explain it to me like I'm a 3-year-old, or explain it to me like I'm a 6-year-old. This repeated, you know, this idea that you need to be able to explain this in the simplest terms and language such that a child could understand, because then we can be confident that it's going to make sense to me. And I, you know, this was in a legal setting, so perhaps to a jury or whatever it might be. But, you know, this same idea here with this, you know, we say this is a children's book, but this is not. This is a book for everybody, yeah, because if we can explain it in a way that children understand, then it's going to make sense for all of us.
And the processes are relevant. So the book doesn't, and it's not at all patronizing, because I think kids need the language and they can understand what their bodies are doing and they can put it all together. So really, even though the only thing that's kiddish is the illustrations, but in terms of the processes, that's relevant for everybody, because anxiety is the same however, you know, however old you are, it works the same way.
So other tips for particularly older kids, and I suppose, I mean, obviously reading the book is going to be a great way to set them up, but you're talking about breathing. Are there other tips that you use? Because I think there's a lot of information out there for parents who, whether it's anxiety or other issues, to help support little kids, primary school age kids. But as they get older, you know, we're still parents. We still have the same responsibilities. And I don't know that there's as much information or resources out there for helping to support teens and kids into their perhaps early 20s. What are some of the other tips that you like to convey to parents to help kids at that age?
Yeah, do you mean in relation to anxiety or generally?
Well, I suppose we can start there and you know, start with anxiety and then perhaps widen out.
Yeah. So, well, with anxiety, I think if you can get your kids to do mindfulness, I think it's extraordinary, and the science and the research coming in on that is just outstanding. There's so much of it, and the way that it changes the structure and function of the brain in really amazing ways. And I think if teens can even take 10 minutes a day away from the noise of life, so away from, you know, the thinking about what's happening at school and what's happening with friends and what do I want to be and where am I headed. And mindfulness does that, and it's a really great habit for them to get into, as well as all the benefits of it is really, really important. So that would be my big anxiety tip. And, of course, understanding how anxiety works, because I think anxiety can get in the way of exams and it can get in the way of making clear decisions at the times they need to. So they need to understand how that works and what they can do and why breathing helps and why, you know, grounding, just feel where you are, why that sort of thing helps and why mindfulness can help. In terms of teens, honestly, I think the most important thing is letting go of trying to control them and going for influence, because our teens know everything we think already. They know. So if we lecture and preach, we lose them. They actually stop coming. So we will not hear about what's going on. And when they're little, they'll tell us, or we'll be able to tell when something's wrong. With teens, we don't know, and it's all in their hands.
It's harder to say.
Yeah, it's all in their hands. So what we have to do is make ourselves really easy to come to. And I think one of the biggest things is they need to trust we can cope with any information they throw at us. So if they're coming to us because it's because they're anxious, if they're coming to us because they don't know where they want to end up, or because something has happened at school that's just stressing for everybody, they need to know we can cope. And the way we do that is by just sitting solid with them and and acknowledging what they're going through and not trying to fix it. I think as parents, we can jump into that fix-it mode. Now, the problem with that is we probably won't give them much that they haven't already thought of themselves because they're smart. So what we need to do is actually give them the space to find their own answers and their own solutions. And the way we do that is just by being a still and steady presence. It doesn't mean we approve of all their behaviour, but there'll be a time for that later. And if we have the connection with them, they'll already know how we feel about it. It's that space to explore and you know, figure out what's right for them and figure out what they need to do. That's all part of the way to adulthood, and that's what adolescence is all about. So letting go of any control and going for influence is a really big thing, because the more we try and control them, the more we lose control, the more they slip away, the more they will turn to people who aren't trying to, you know, manage them and control them, and people who will give them that loving acceptance of them, not necessarily of their behaviour, but also that strength and that steady presence that I think all adolescents need. They need to know we're on their team, and they need to know that even when they stuff it up monumentally, we're here for them to sort through it. So it's always easier, I think, even though it's a time where they are designed to pull away from us and towards a peer group or towards a work group or a partner, they need us more than ever. And so we don't need to give them any more reason to pull away. What we need to do is be the steady, loving, good influence, because there's plenty of influences out there. There's plenty of people who'll accept the stuff they do, the crazy stuff they do. But without necessarily accepting them for who they are. And I think that's what we can give them. And it is about, I can see that you know you've messed up, or I can see that this is really worrying you, what your friends are going through. I want to hear more about it. I want to understand more about it. And I'm here for you. So it's just that we don't need to fix it. We just need to give them the space, and they'll do that. They're really smart. And the other thing is they know more about their situation and their resources than we do. And yeah, we can see around corners, but if we just keep loading them with control and rules and advice that they haven't asked for, we do lose them.
Yeah, so it's very much a support role. Mm-hmm. And I like what you were saying about wanting to understand, so asking questions, you know, the power of asking questions, not nitty-gritty tell me exactly what happened when type questions, but just those questions about how do you feel? What do you think you could do? How could I help you or support you as you cope with this particular challenge?
Yeah. And sometimes just silence, because they'll love it that you're just happy to sit with them, or they'll get so uncomfortable with silence, they'll start talking, and that's when
open up.
That's when you find the stuff you need to find. But honestly, I think adolescents are amazing, and I think what they have to deal with is incredible. And I think for the most part, they do an extraordinary job. They're facing things we never had to face. They will know when we're not happy with them. We don't need to beat it home. And you know, I can't stress enough, it doesn't mean we approve of their behaviour, but we can disapprove lovingly and disapprove in a way that doesn't shame and shut down, because if we shame them, they're not going to come to us. We lose them. We lose that opportunity to influence them and to, give them a space. And the other thing is, if we shame their silly decisions, that's when we run the risk of them defending their decisions, because no one wants to feel stupid. No one wants to feel like an idiot. So I think usually they know when they've messed up. And if they can come to you, that's a really great thing. It's a really great thing.
Mm. And that's an interesting thing to think about, because, I mean, I know my six-year-old knows when he's messed up. You know, little kids know, and maybe we can approach that differently when they're small. But, yes, it's having the trust perhaps in an adolescent that they know that what they're doing isn't maybe the best choice or the best decision. And as you say, not shaming them in that, but in actually, you know, recognising it perhaps with them, supporting them, and then helping them to work their way back out of it if that's what needs to happen.
And what I say is, we have to treat them as the people we want them to be. So when they do something stupid, it's actually, no, you're better than that. And I think, you know, you're better than that. Can you talk to, do you want to talk about it? So it's, again, it's, you know, it's opening that influence, and it's opening influence and letting go of control. And even if it's stuff that they don't know how to deal with, like anxiety, or like if they're feeling depressed, or like if they're worried about how they feel, they need to see we can cope with that information. And if we jump too quickly in to fix it, it actually brings up our, and it doesn't mean we won't feel really anxious about what they're telling us. And inside we can just be a mess because we're going, holy moly, well, I don't even know what to do. But on the outside, if we can stay with them, we're more likely to encourage that dialogue. And sometimes it's okay to say, you know, I just don't know what to say. I actually did it with my son the other day. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. And he said, I know, Mom, I'm really confused too. So, you know, it's just that, and it's actually meeting them where they are.
It's empathy, isn't it, really? It's interesting. My husband and I have been talking about, there's a little short film that you might have come across called It's Not About the Nail.
Oh, no.
That one, no, it's wonderful, and it really does encapsulate this idea that sometimes, and this is in a you know, partner relation, adult partner relationship, and the girl's got this giant nail sticking out of her forehead, and it really just encapsulates this idea that people sometimes just, we just want to be heard. We don't want someone to solve the problem. We don't want the obvious pointed out to us. We just want someone to sit and listen and have empathy for what we're feeling or what we're going through. I'll send you a link to it because it's wonderful. It's like a 2-minute movie, and I'll put it in the show notes for this episode as well so that other people can see it. But for me, I think it just articulated, and it's kind of humorous, and humor always opens us up to new ideas. So it just really articulates this idea that, you know, people don't want things fixed for them, especially not, and adolescents I can understand as much as teens, and even I've got a 9-year-old, and I think sometimes he knows what to do. He doesn't want someone always, sometimes he wants me to fix it, but sometimes, you know, he too just needs recognition that what you're dealing with is hard and it's difficult and it's no fun, and I hear that, and I'm here for you in whatever you choose to do to try and resolve it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I think the easiest way sometimes is to think of what we would need in the same situation. And when we've stuffed up, we don't need someone telling us we've stuffed up because we already know. And we don't need someone coming at us with all the solutions that we would have thought of because we're not silly. And so by the time they're coming to us, they've probably thought of everything that we can think of off the top of their heads in that 30 seconds where they've just opened up. So it doesn't mean you don't talk to them about solutions, but it's with them and it's almost on their terms. You know?
I think I spoke to Shel Taylor, who's a child psych here in my hometown of Ballarat, in season one of the podcast, and she was talking about the need, particularly with little kids, but I think it absolutely works with bigger kids and adults, the need to help them regulate their behaviour and then relate, so make that connection before we can then start to look at, well, what are the solutions that we've got here, which I think is what we're talking about as well. Yeah. Karen, I'm interested to know what has been and what is the most useful thing you've learned as a psychologist in terms of maintaining your own well-being and happiness and helping you to flourish.
Do you know, for me, it's mindfulness and exercise.
Yep.
They're the big ones. I normally don't do both at the same time. I'll go through a period of, I would like to say that I do. I'd also like to say that I eat really well and get enough sleep and, you know, do it, but I don't. But mindfulness and exercise are the big ones. I also know that if I do neither mindfulness and exercise, I can tell I'm less clear. I'm, you know, a bit moodier, a bit more, I don't know, just not as creative. When I do one or the other, I feel that wholeness and that wellness. And I do, knowing why it works, because I probably wouldn't have done either if I didn't know how the effect it has on mental health. So at the moment I'm exercising. If I can't fall asleep, I'll do mindfulness, but I tend to not do full periods of it. I'm just not disciplined enough.
I know.
But also, But also I kind of go, okay, my 45 minutes today is going to be spent, you know, going for a run or a walk or doing something. And that's my time. So that's how I'll either spend it doing mindfulness or exercise. They're so important. And the way they change the brain, it's almost like getting, you know, mechanics in there and getting them to just give it all the service and make sure it's beautifully. Mindfulness and exercise are so powerful. So that's the thing. And I will also, you know, go through stages where I don't feel like doing either, but I just know the difference it makes. So that's probably, I think, the two big ones.
I think that that's always been the piece that's missing, especially when we talk about, and these things that we know as psychologists, and I certainly get the sense that there's more and more discussion now of these, you know, what we call lifestyle elements that we can all implement in order to thrive and flourish and be happier and maintain our mental health, that sleep, diet, exercise, and mindfulness. But I love your approach of having a bit of flexibility about that. Saying, right, I've just got allocated time. I've got to allocate time to do one of, you know, these things, whether it's exercise or rather than, because we can get so caught up in rules that we set for ourselves and then that kind of negative thinking that flows on from that about I failed because I didn't do my, you know, mindfulness and my exercise and eat my seven vegetables and whatever else it might be. So I love the flexibility and I love that why part as well. I think that's one of the things that a lot of us struggle with in terms of implementing any new habit is that we do it because we think we should and not because we understand really why and how it benefits us. And for me, particularly with exercise, as you say, so I've never been an inactive person, but I've never been a fitness freak or, you know, really avid exerciser. But knowing that I've been pretty consistent with yoga, but even if it's walking, and I have episodes where I try running as well. And yeah, knowing how it benefits, why it does it, and also then having that actual experience of it and being able to reflect on it is incredibly powerful for starting to actually engage in some of those habits or create the habits.
And I think I always used to feel I've never loved exercising. I've never just looked forward to it. I've never been that person. And I know I used to feel good after exercise, but I thought that was because it was over, you know.
the relief.
That was so good. But now, and that's not enough to sustain me, you know, when I'm staring down the barrel of 45 minutes of, and I'm actually in the middle of doing something I love, which is, you know, I'm writing or I'm doing something, and I have to break it to go and exercise. But what is enough for me is knowing what it's doing for my brain, but also everything I feel when I exercise makes sense. So that that calm and that clarity and just that, I don't know, that sense of wholeness, I don't know how else to say it, really it all makes sense because it's happening in the brain, and exercise is amazing for it. Mindfulness is amazing too.
Interesting that you use that phrase, it makes sense. I was in one of my other interviews with Laura Braid, and I said I'd just been to see Martin Seligman, who's sort of the father of positive psychology speak, and he opened up with this story about having an anxiety dream and waking up from it, and instead of feeling panicked, actually reflecting on his life and feeling like, no, I don't need to worry about this because life makes sense to me. You know, some of these intuitive things that we have about things feeling right or making sense or making us feel kind of whole or complete. You know, it's language that we use that's hard to quantify but so meaningful, I think, for human beings.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is because everything is in us, you know, it's everything is in us, everything we need and the answers are in us, and our wholeness is there. It just gets fragmented sometimes. We need to bring it together and we can do that.
My very final question for you, Karen, other than Hey Warrior, which is obviously a fantastic resource for everybody, as we've discussed, are there other books or maybe other types of resources that you fall back on that you know have helped you but you also often recommend to other people?
My favourite book that probably has had the most influence on me, and I don't even know why really, but it just has, and everyone who asks me, I get asked to them, is Into the Magic Shop. It was written by James Doty, who's a neurosurgeon, and he learned as a young child how important your thoughts are and mindfulness, And he didn't realise it was that at the time, and how important it is to get you to where you want to be and how you want to be. And so it is, it's his story told by him as a neurosurgeon, and he writes beautifully. He writes really beautifully. But also he talks about how powerful your thoughts are and why they are and why mindfulness, how mindfulness works and what it does. I don't even know if he calls it that, actually, because I don't think it was called that to him when he was young. He was just given the process. But it's a really great book. And I read that book, and I don't often finish books, so I start them. I've started these, and there aren't many that I've finished, but I finished that one, and then I read it. I started reading it again because it's one of those gems that you just read and you find something new.
You keep getting more.
Yeah, and it's an extraordinary book, so I really love that book. That's probably the big one for me. That's the standout. So, and I don't even have my copy here because I don't even know who's got it because
you've shared it around.
Yeah. So, but that's a really great book. And I think too that it was written by a neurosurgeon who deals with the brain all day. That just gave it a little. Bit more of a punch, I think.
Okay, I will add it. One of the, I suppose, exciting challenges for me when I ask this question of lots of people is that there's so many books that people recommend. I'm like, oh, I've got to add that one to my list. So my list of books that I must get to is getting longer and longer and longer. But I will absolutely add that in, and I'll put the links to the book in the show notes for this episode as well as, of course, Hey Warrior and the Hey Sigmund website. Is there anything exciting coming up for Hey Sigmund in the near future?
There's lots of things, actually. So the second book for kids with anxiety is due to be here in early June.
Wonderful.
And there's another book with the illustrator, which is kind of about boundaries, and it's a bit different to the others because it's more a story book, but it's about bullying and boundaries. And then I'm studying video library, and also The Toy Warrior is coming as well. So I just, you know, I've got my finger in a few pies. It's just finding the time to get them all there.
And that's exciting. And I think it's interesting because it really does sound like those different professions that we talked about earlier, especially the journalism and communication and education, as well as your psychology, are all coming together beautifully in this, you know, one little piece of the internet that's now spread out into hard copies as well. So there's a little full circle going on that's obviously very exciting.
It's interesting, and it is. I love doing this. I love what I'm doing. I love having the opportunity to do what I'm doing. I don't mean I love what I'm doing. I mean I love that I'm able to do it, and I'm really grateful. And it is, I think, you know, when you grab the opportunities or beat down the door to find them, you end up where you're meant to be most of the time. Sometimes a convoluted path, but.
trust all those signals and those instincts. Yes. Karen, that absolutely comes through. I mean, I have the benefit of seeing you that our audience don't, but I know it comes through in your voice as much as it does in your face in terms of the passion for what you do and the passion for being able to communicate this knowledge and understanding to a much broader audience who I know really benefit from that. So thank you very much both for that, for the Hey Sigmund website, but also for your time on our podcast today. It's been really, really lovely chatting to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. And I've really loved chatting with you, and it's been really great. So I'm really grateful that you invited me along.
Wonderful. We were very pleased to have you, and we may well have to get you back then to talk about these new books further down the track. A little later on. Thank you again, Karen.
Thank you.
If you haven't seen Karen's book, Hey Warrior, I really recommend taking a look at it and getting hold of a copy. It's a fantastic resource, particularly for families, but really for anyone who'd like to understand and take control of anxiety and its pesky symptoms. I hope that Karen's great tips for understanding and parenting adolescents are also as helpful to you as they are to me. You'll find a link to Hey Sigmund, Hey Warrior, and Karen's social media accounts on the Potential Psychology website at potential.com.au. Join the conversation about this episode on our website or on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Potential Psychology. And of course, we'd love it if you provide feedback to us on the podcast and share the love around. Ratings and reviews in iTunes are fabulous, and we read and appreciate every single one. Next week on the podcast, we're talking about one of my favourite topics, yoga. I'm chatting to psychologist, personal trainer and yoga instructor Susie Redding about the mind-body connection, how the way we move affects the way we feel, and what we really mean when psychologists talk about self-care. Here's Susie to tell you more.
We're pretty good at taking care of our physical health, right? We all know it's necessary to move. We've got to nourish ourselves with what we eat. It's not selfish to get a good night's sleep. It's certainly not indulgent to brush your teeth and have a shower. But when it comes to the stuff that nurtures us energetically, emotionally, mentally, people think, oh gosh, do I really need that? Yeah, we do.
Have a fabulous week, and thanks for being here with me.